Okay, perhaps we'll get started. Okay, everybody ready? Any questions so far? I know that every student has a question in their mind.
Will it be on the test?
No, it's not that kind of a question. The question is, should I really be taking this course or not? So before I proceed, I want to address that using a tried and proven teaching technique called the top 10 list. So we're going to do the top 10 reasons to enroll in Perspectives in Assistive Technology. And this particular one I stole from David Letterman. He actually did this on TV. Are you ready? Number 10. This is the best course I teach. Of course, some people might say, no, this is the only course I teach. But since it's the only course I teach, I focus all my energy into it the entire year. So this is going to be good. Number 9, it's the best assistive technology course at Stanford. And some people may say, well, this is the only assistive technology course at Stanford. But to that, I'll say, you know, assistive technology is taught at other universities, and it's not a backwater type subject. It is taught at other places, so it's about time that Stanford had a class like this. Number 8, everybody who's taken the course for a grade has gotten an A. Okay? There's one guy who got an A minus, but everybody else has got an A, so is this... Do you feel this happening here? Number 7, you are compelled to do it. There's been some studies saying that the top motivational factors for students include social good. And this course has a lot of social good because we're going to be doing stuff called service learning and working with people in the local community. So you can't help not taking this course. It's everybody has a bit of empathy in them, and that's what is we're going to be using in this course. Number 6, you want to know if your Stanford education skills can be used to benefit others. You know, somebody's spending thousands of dollars in getting you this education, but an education is nothing unless you can do something with it. And so in this class, we're going to do something with your education. Are you ready for that? Number 5A, to meet your love connection. Well, this isn't really, you may be thinking something different. We're not talking about, you know, boyfriend-girlfriend thing. We're talking about loving a subject. And you might find assistive technology to be something that you want to work in further. And if past classes are any indication of that, there'll be at least a couple students who will be doing additional things in assistive technology over the years. Okay. 5B, the fame and notoriety. This is a big one. See this? This is the paparazzi, and this is a assistive technology student team here. You can see they're on the red carpet, all the notoriety that they're getting here. And you can have your name, you know, here, you know, with a symbol for assistive technology over here. And these people will get to because they already have fame and notoriety. But if you were in this course last year and did a project, you might find yourself on the homepage of the Stanford website or the homepage of the Stanford alumni website. So that's where the fame comes in. Number 4, the job opportunities. Now, you know, certainly there's a lot of jobs in rehab, engineering, and assistive technology, you know, dealing with people with disabilities, but there's also a lot of people doing research in this area too, so that may be something to consider. But, you know, beyond that, I can imagine, you know, your resume in front of a human resource person. He has a pile of resumes there, and he says, oh, another straight-A student from Stanford. Oh, another straight-A student from Stanford. You know, I think taking this class might distinguish you from all those other straight-A students at Stanford, because they'll see that you're doing something that
is above and beyond the ordinary. You're working with people in the community, and they've really done something interesting. And if you work on a project, you're going to be very passionate about it, and you'll be able to, when you have that job interview, really say, really be passionate, and they're going to see the passion in your eyes, and you're going to be very excited, and you're going to get the job, no matter what it is. It doesn't necessarily have to be in rehab engineering, but this course may be just the thing to differentiate you from other folks.
Okay. Number three, you've heard good things about the course. How many people have heard good things about the course?
Okay, wow.
Wow, that's amazing. So, you know, we have our field trips. We have tours. We don't have any fireworks yet, but, you know, maybe this year. So we'll see. Number two, you want to take a course that is something completely different. So, you know, assistive technology, you know, who takes that? Who do you know that takes an assistive technology course? So this is something completely different. This is also called the Monty Python effect. And this is an academic term. Okay. And I got to turn up the volume. And the number one reason, I'm just going to miss it. Drum roll. We got a drum roll there. The number one reason to take this course is that you're going to have a huge head start if you take ME-113. So if you're going to be taking ME-113 next quarter, you and your project team can move into ME-113 and be 8 weeks ahead of every other student in ME-113. Well, they're just starting. You'll have 8 weeks of project stuff. So here's a list of all the reasons. Now, do any of these reasons resonate with anybody? I mean, does it? Yes? I'm talking about students.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Now we've got that out of the way.
So I'm Dave, and I would like you to call me Dave, because
this guy here, he's the professor from Gilligan's Island.
He and I have one thing in common, that neither of us are professors, okay?
Who remembers the show
Ben Casey from TV? Okay, just the old folks.
This guy, this character is Dr. Zorba.
Who played Dr. Zorba?
Sam Jaffe. So he and I have three things in common. His character, his first name of his character is David. That's my name. The actor's last name is Jaffe, same as me. But, more importantly, neither he nor I have a PhD or an MD. Okay?
So,
and this is my dad, and I would like to reserve Mr. Jaffe as his name. So if you eliminate all that, the only thing you can call me is Dave.
I really appreciate that. I'm the same as all you students. I'm just a little bit further down the road of life, okay, and a little bit grayer.
Okay. And if you're going to be talking about me in your project report, this is how you can refer to me. Okay. So I will be your organizer, your master of ceremonies, you know, sort of like the assistive technology version of Ed Sullivan or Ryan Seacrest, okay? I don't necessarily have a lot of talent. You'll be hearing from other people throughout this course, but we'll have discussions as well. But I'm not going to be doing all the lectures.
So here's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to
talk about the course, talk about assistive technology, and talk about projects. So welcome to the class. And as you notice, there are both students in the class and people and colleagues from the community. So I hope you don't find that upsetting. But we're all part of a community, and we're all here to learn. So I want to introduce the teaching team. And there's nobody on the teaching team more senior academically than Professor Drew Nelson. And And we also have a student liaison, Harpreet. Don't think she's here, but she'll be around. Now, the idea to have these people is that if you have any questions about the course or your situation in the course, or have a concern, you can approach me, or if it's more appropriate, you can approach Professor Nelson or talk to Harpreet. So we have a lot of ways to communicate. But I really like, if you have a concern about something, I don't want to hear it for the first time during the end of the quarter evaluation, because I won't have a chance to correct it. So,
you know, let me know, and I'll be able to fix anything I'm able to. Let me know if you have conflicts with other things beforehand, because that makes it a lot easier to know if you're going to be here or not. And it's just more reasonable to, you know, to tell me beforehand that you may be missing a day. Okay.
Oh, hi. We have a couple of clipboards. The one with the white sheet on it is for community members. And please sign this if you're not getting emails from me. And this is your first time here. The pink one is for students. Students are required to sign in every class because I take attendance, because that's a part of the requirements for the course. And everybody, all the students should have gotten this small sign-up form. If you haven't, please grab one and fill it out and give it to me at the end. Okay?
These people again. We'll get to them a little bit later.
So the class came about as a way of introducing assistive technology to students who wanted to work on assistive technology projects in ME113. And so about 5 years ago, this is the fifth season of the class, started the
class.
But not all folks who are taking this class go on to ME113. We understand that you have other things to do, and it's okay if you don't take ME113.
The course goals expose students to the all the issues facing engineers and people who work with assistive technology and individuals with disabilities in the design of assistive technology devices, and engage students in a team-based experience. This is a project that exercises their team working skills and applies an engineering design process to tackle difficulties experienced by people with disabilities and seniors. And there's an opportunity for students to interact with users of assistive technology in the local community. And as part of the course, which I think is very important, is to enhance your communications skills through in-class discussions, report writing, and presentations.
Because these are the things that are going to make the difference when you're out of school. I'm sure that everybody has gotten very good at studying and taking exams and quizzes and stuff like that. But those skills are not going to be of major importance when you actually get a job. So the communication skills are important.
So we're helping students
use their engineering skills maybe for the first time in doing something that's
beneficial for people with disabilities. And we're also here to provide information to the Stanford community.
These lectures are open to the public, so invite your friends, even if they can only come for one session.
That's fine. What this course isn't, it isn't about starting a company. It isn't about commercializing a device or product. It isn't about business or manufacturing. And the projects are not with big companies or in other countries. And you don't need a passport to take this course.
Okay?
There are no exams or quizzes. There are no books to buy or readings, but I can suggest things for you to read or look up. No problem sets and no boring lectures, I guarantee it. Not that there's anything wrong with those things, but not in this class. What this course is, it's about engineering, and it's about the integration of people and technology. And it's about assistive technology in its many forms, and you'll be hearing from a lot of people who approach assistive technology from a variety of different perspectives. That's why it's called Perspectives in Assistive Technology.
And for students who are working on a project, we go through the engineering design development process. And we emphasize teamwork, and we also work with people in the local community, and that is the Stanford community and the immediate area. Course credentials. This is a certified service learning course. And that's also an approved course for the ME undergraduate degree. You have to go through it's on page 308 of this handbook. And Professor McGinn in the Technology and Society group said he will entertain a petition to use this course toward that requirement. So if you're interested in doing so, please let me know. And the course has also been listed as one of two Save the World winter quarter courses in the unofficial Stanford blog. And here it is, in Save the World Engineering ENGR 110. Okay, so
you're here.
The course structure, we will have two weekly lectures, and they'll be by a variety of different people. We'll be exploring different aspects of assistive technology and their use by people with disabilities, from engineers and clinicians and researchers and persons with disabilities. So we'll be having a fun time. There will not be an opportunity for thinking and discussion, and I encourage everybody, not just students, but everybody, to participate in these discussions. And for students working on a project, they'll be experiencing a design experience that goes through all the good stuff I mentioned before. From a student's point of view, I hope that you will gain an appreciation for all the challenges in developing assistive technology and learn a lot about the engineering concepts and strategies and ethical issues and about people with disabilities and in the intellectual property rights as well. For those working on a project, you're going to be engaging, you know, with a team in building up a prototype of something that's functional. You'll be testing it with a person with a disability and reporting the results and communicating it, you know, via a presentation and writing a report. And so you'll be working with some people with disabilities. And it's going to help them because it's going to improve their independence and their quality of life. So you should feel very good after the end of the class. A little bit about projects. I'm not asking you to do something really, you know, impressive, because you basically only have 8 weeks, and I know that. And a low-tech solution is fine. You know, sometimes you're searching for a solution, and you have to make a decision whether to turn right or left, high-tech or low-tech. But a low-tech solution is perfect as long as it gets the job done. Getting through the design process and getting it to work are priorities for the course. Credit options. There's several flavors of options. The one unit options, both require you to take attend at least 10 lectures, and hence the reason for the sign-up sheet. They can be any ones you want, and certainly you can attend more, and I encourage you to attend as many as you can, because they're all going to be fantastic. So if you just sign in on the attendance sheet 10 times, you get a passing grade. If you want a letter grade, you get credit for attending the course. If you want a letter grade, then I'm asking you to do a research on a topic, assistive technology topic, with a person with a disability, or work on a paper design of an assistive technology device. And these projects would be individual projects. Okay? For 3 units, you work in teams on projects, and you have to attend all the lectures. And if you miss a lecture, the lectures are going to be audio recorded, as I'm doing now, and you can review them online and review the handouts and the slides online and write a short summary and your thoughts about the lecture, and that will get you credit for taking the class. You can work on the project in this class and carry it forward into CS194, which is the computer science version of ME113, the project, senior project course, or continue in ME113, or continue with independent study in the spring, or
just work on it.
Just for this quarter. It's all okay. Breaking down the project activities, you're working on a team project. You're going to be reviewing the project offerings. There's a handout about that. You're going to be selecting a project and forming a team. I'm going to be sending out a list of people who are signed up to work on team projects so you know who everybody is, but you can get together after class today and
Thursday. You're going to investigate the needs of an individual with a disability, figure out, you know, what the problem is, what actually needs to be done to further define the project. Look up information on other solutions that may be online or commercially available, and you get to do the fun stuff, brainstorm, evaluate, and choose a design project, and then prototype, fabricate, test it, and see how well it works, and report on it, write a report, and present it in class, and at the end of the quarter, you'll be submitting an individual reflection of how the course affected you. Again, for those getting a letter grade, there's a midterm and final report, and I also want you to, you know, communicate your team's progress with me so I know that you're on track and everything, and reflect on the class experience. Grading. For those getting a letter grade, here's the breakdown. Can anybody tell me what's wrong with these numbers? Come on.
110%.
Participation is the extra element, and that includes all these things. I really encourage you to talk in class at the proper time to be in the discussion. So if you max out on everything, I'll give you an A+. Okay, is that fair? If you're taking your project into ME113 or CS194, you're going to be doing a lot of the same thing. You're doing another iteration of your project, another 8-week iteration of the project. So it's pretty much the same kind of stuff. Want to know more about ME113? Professor Nelson is the person to talk to because he teaches that class. Oh, hi. Come on in. Before most every lecture, we're going to have an opportunity for discussion. I'll be presenting some discussion topics that we'll be talking about, and this is the point in the talk where in the session, class session, where we're going to be having a discussion. So these are some of the topics. Who is disabled? That's a handout. We're going to be talking about failure. I'll be showing you some old and new technology. We'll be talking about humor as it relates to people with disability. We're going to be talking about words and labels and isms. So those are the categories. We have a very full schedule of lectures, and each of these are going to be excellent lectures, so you don't want to miss a single one. On Thursday, we're going to be having people come in and pitch you their project ideas. They're going to try to convince you to work on the project that they're pitching to you. So this will be a chance for you to see what the project's all about, as well as reading about it in the handout and interacting with the person who's suggested the project. That'll be all day Thursday. Starting next week, we'll have lectures. This first lecture is by an occupational therapist. And the following lecture is Design Challenges. It'll be a very interactive session talking about brainstorming and the process, the engineering design process. We're going to have a colleague come in and talk about this prosthetic hand that's a very low-cost hand that's used in developing countries. It's very interesting to see how that has come about. We'll be having a session, Design Challenges in Assistive Technology. This will be a lecture by a colleague who's a mechanical engineer who's done work in assistive technology. He's a very successful engineer and consultant, and he's worked on a bunch of projects, and he'll be talking about his experiences and reflect on what's important and how he does things. So that'll be really interesting. perspectives of students with a disability. We're going to have a panel of students with a disability, including Nicole, and they'll be up in front, and we'll be engaged in a discussion with them, so that ought to be pretty interesting. Senior perspective, this is not about fourth year undergraduate students. These are old people, you know, people, older people, senior citizens, seniors. So we're going to hear about that. Tools and techniques for individuals with visual impairments. That'll be really interesting. You don't want to miss that. We're going to have our first tour is Willow Garage. And if you don't know, Willow Garage is a company that in Menlo Park that makes robots. And so we're going to have a tour given by the CEO, Steve Cousins, who is also a Stanford grad. We're going to have a Skype lecture. And this year, I guarantee it's going to work. With a colleague from Spokane, talking about aphasia, which is a communication disorder. I'm going to have a colleague fly in from Nevada, talking about designing beyond the needs to meet the needs of all people. Terry Adams from Stanford, she always gives interesting presentations. She'll be talking again this year. We're going to have Adam Shepard and Jessica Rose talk about gait, cerebral palsy, and functional electric stimulation. That ought to be very stimulating. Have a colleague be talking about what it takes to come up with a solution for a person in a work situation or a student in a studying situation if they have particular needs. And he's the guy that's worked on coming up with solutions for years and years. We're going to have a company manufacturer come in and tell us what it takes to bring a device, assistive technology device to market. Then our second tour will be of the VA and spinal cord injury. We've had these tours before. It ought to be very exciting. You don't want to miss that. And to top it off, Ralph Hotchkiss is going to be coming in. He's going to be talking about wheelchair fabrication in developing countries. This lecture will be double awesome, so you don't want to miss that. I guarantee this whole room will be filled with people. Okay. Between lectures, I'll be sending you some email about new products, some research and development, and interesting articles that I found on the internet and in magazines and stuff, just to show you that assistive technology is a now thing. It's happening now. It's not old. It's not an academic backwater. It's an area for research, and it's an area for study as well. So as you're welcome to have your friends come by, invite them. They don't have to enroll into the class to sit in on lectures. This is lectures open to the public, so everybody's welcome. We have this great classroom, so want to get it filled up with lots of people. Okay? Any questions on that part? Any general questions about the course structure? If you have a specific issue with you, you can see me after class. Okay? On to assistive technology. So these are the things we're going to be discussing. Definitions, overview of assistive technology, what is disability, range of disabilities, numbers of people with disabilities, and goals of rehabilitation, needs of people, perception of people, and lots of examples of assistive technology products and devices. And we'll also talk a little about social correctness as well. We'll get into that a little bit more during some of our discussions. So definitions, these are the things we're going to define, and this is really neat. This dictionary is open to the chocolate. So that's my kind of dictionary, where it's open to chocolate. How is disability defined? Well, it turns out that disability is defined based upon who is defining it and what the needs for that definition are. One definition concerns working. If you want to know how many people aren't working because of their disability, then you define disability as a health problem or condition that prevents people from working or limits the kind of work they can do. Okay? The VA talks about disability as a loss of limbs and function, and they always
they use a percent disabled type of definition too, and this
relates to the benefits that they get as well.
So you often hear, you know, a veteran say, I'm 100% disabled. So that's
where that comes from. A more general term focuses on activity. So disability is defined in terms of limitations in the person's activities due to a health condition. And activities is defined as lots of things, including working, housework, taking care of individual needs, and other age-appropriate activities. So that's a more general definition. But I added in my own definition to be even more inclusive, where it's a health-related condition that prevents an individual from taking full advantage of life's opportunities, including education, vocation, recreation, and activities of daily living. So that's everything. You know, opportunities.
I think everybody gets opportunities in their life, and if you can't take advantage of that, you're missing something. And if you can't take advantage of it because of a disability, then a health condition, then that's a disability.
Disability in the U.S. This is not a Verizon cell phone coverage map, okay? This is a map that I got from, it says disability status. But
the point here is that people with disabilities are all over the country. There's even some in this room. In fact,
you'll see how many are in this room. I just looked up this number recently about how many people in the U.S. are described as being have activity limitations, 71.4 million, which is 23% of the 308 million census. And this number varies depending on how you define it. But worldwide, from 100 to 650 million people worldwide with a disability. There's people with severe disability and kids with disability. This is a really important statistic. 25% of healthcare costs relate to disability.
So that's a huge thing.
15 million people are 65 or over. There's people who are blind, have vision impairments, hearing impairments. 1 million wheelchair users. 6 million people have development disabilities. And 5% of people are born with their disability, and others, they acquire a disability. But if you add in people who are overweight and obese, which is estimated as a third of the U.S. population, so these are really staggering numbers. And people who are overweight, who have limitations in what they can do, certainly can be considered disabled. In the U.S., the disability rate varies by age, sex, race, ethnicity, economic status, you know, where you live, everything. And this is a huge point. Disabilities result in a reduced chance for employment because
maybe you can't get the education that you need
to get the job. And if you don't have the job,
then you don't have the money.
So a lot of people with disabilities are poor. And as the nation ages, the number of people experiencing limitations will certainly increase
as we all get older.
Disability types. Congenital means that you're born with it. Acquired means you get it through accident, injury, disease. You can have a temporary disability.
You can break your leg or something, and you're temporarily disabled, and hopefully you get better.
Physical disabilities consist of sensory. That means something with your eyes, ears, you know, hearing, touch, stuff like that. Functional means refers to your inability to do things like walk or manipulate things. And then there's people, you know, who have a neurological or brain injury and have problems with their head. But you know, you can be disabled and be in this cool cartoon group, right? You can be disabled and be a student in a clip art. You can be disabled and be the president of the United States. Okay, what disability, what disease did this president have? They said he had polio, but they're not 100% sure. You can be an avatar in Second Life with a disability. Okay, so again, disabilities are everywhere. There is a group of individuals who are so impaired that they spend 12 to 25 years in institutions before they can contribute significantly to society. They're an extreme burden on their families, too. You're all disabled.
Do you consider yourself disabled because you haven't yet got the education you need to be
contributing
to society? Well,
it's up to you to answer. For people with disabilities, you want to regain your wellness and function.
If you have a broken leg, you want it to get better. You want to be able to walk again.
You want to be able to perform tasks by yourself.
You want to be able to do things yourself.
You want to get around, be able to get around yourself. You want to be able to dance yourself, go to the bathroom yourself. You want to have you want to maximize your quality of life.
You want to take full advantage of all your opportunities that life presents to you,
and that includes, you know, education, all these things. You want to be able to pursue happiness. And most people want to be
part of society. They want to be integrated into everybody else.
You want to be one, you know.
You want to do things with other people and not do things just with other people with disabilities.
In the U.S., disabilities is no longer the stigma it once was.
Through mainstreaming, people with disabilities are in schools and
on the job, and the Americans with Disabilities Act has done a lot to promote that. In other countries, they don't have that advantage. I've been to other places where the people with disabilities are at home all the time. They don't go out. They don't go to school. They don't get jobs. So there's sort of a stigma there. And in places like Japan, they really like to come up with a technical solution to the problems that people with disability have, which is fine. But, you know, you got to have the human element in there as well.
You may not want to relate to a robot, you know, all day. You want to have some human contact
as well. This is sort of a big issue for me. It's best to put the person rather than the condition first. So you want to talk about individuals or people with a disability. You don't want to talk about
the disabled.
You want to focus on a person's capabilities rather than their disabilities.
This person is a wheelchair user. So, you know, he's a person, plus he knows how to use a wheelchair.
So that's sort of different. You want to refer to the person rather than the disability. And to be inclusive, you want to talk, you don't want to say the blind, the disabled, the deaf, because, you know, to me that separates them from the rest of the people. And what you really want to do is include them with everybody else, because we're all living together, right? More correctness. You know, there's a lot of short-haired terms that people use, you know, para and quad. And a lot of times these shorthand terms are okay. And they're sort of neutral. But then you get to talk about things that are sort of derogatory, you know, gimp, crip, spaz, retard. And
however, if you get a bunch of people together who are all wheelchair users, they are happy to refer themselves as crimps or gimps and stuff. So it's okay to refer to yourself as in a particular way, but it's best when you refer to another group to refer to them in the most positive sense
you can have. And the use of terms is really important for me. To me, a patient is a person who is undergoing medical attention. A user is somebody who is operating a device like a wheelchair. A subject is somebody who is a participant in a research study. A consumer is somebody who's making a buying choice. These are all can be used as sometimes used as references for people with disability. What is really offensive to me, but you hear this all the time on the news, is terms like afflicted with, confined to,
a victim of a disease and stuff. So that's to me is very negative. And you don't have to say things like that. You can use other terms, you know, living with, survivor of. Those are all more positive terms, and maybe even the best term is recovering from, because you have a sense that the person is going to be getting better. And, you know, words really do matter. So, you know, it's best to refer to people in the most positive sense you can.
And, you know, in the past there's been terms that have been okay to use that are now sort of out of fashion. You know, you don't say people are crippled now, but there used to be a crippled children's society, and actually in Australia, there is still a crippled children's society. We don't talk of people about retarded anymore, and deaf and dumb is no longer used, and lame is used so many ways in the public now on TV shows and stuff like that.
But you got to remember that it sort of came from a disability term, which you know may be sort of offensive. Even the word mute, was a term for people who could not talk. We call them people who are not vocal.
Non-vocal.
And terms like moron, imbecile, and idiot were actually classifications, IQ classifications of people, but that's sort of fallen out of favor, scientifically. And sort of the other way around, too, there is a legitimate medical condition called persistent vegetative state, which seems to me sort of, a bad term because you're calling the person a vegetable, basically.
And that's not good either. So there's people in history, who have been disabled.
In the film, you see a lot of films that focus on people with disabilities. Just in the theaters now, you have The King's Speech about disability. You have True Grit, guy's got one eye. And in Gulliver's Travels, you have, short people, tall people. So
there's an amazing number of films that focus on disability. And there's even stupid motivational posters that, use those terms. So let's practice. This is my colleague, Robert Van Netten. He's a rehab engineer from Florida. I've known him for over 30 years. How shall we
refer him? Nobody from last year can answer this. Who's here last year? They know the answer. He's Bob. That's his name.
Yeah, so he's a pretty talented person, actually. Oh, here's some people with a disorder.
The colors are pigment blue.
Assistive technology is a term that that to me refers to both devices that benefit people with disabilities and the process that makes these devices available to people with disabilities. So the device, an assistive technology device, is one that has some kind of benefit. It could be a diagnostic benefit. It could monitor a person, how well they're doing, how much strength they have. It can be functional. It can help a person walk. It can be adaptive to make them be able to use a computer or have some type of rehabilitative effect that can make them, get better. And engineers employ an assistive technology process to, specify, design, develop, test, and bring new devices to market. So assistive technology is a combination of both, in my mind. And there's lots of people, not just engineers, that are involved in assistive technology. And some of them are researchers and involved in developing things, prescribing things, fitting them, supplying them, and assessing their benefit. And these are the titles, physicians, clinicians, therapists, suppliers, policymakers, educators. They're all these people are involved in assistive technology. So the assistive technology devices promote greater independence and increased opportunities for participation by enabling people with disabilities to perform tasks that they were formerly unable to accomplish or had difficulty accomplishing or required assistance through some kind of enhancer, that method of interacting with the world
around them.
So there's lots of new assistive technology coming out, and we're going to be talking about them and be showing you a bunch of things. But the new designs have the potential to further improve the lives of people with disabilities. And the hot things on the market are computers and implants and prosthetic devices, smart prosthetic devices, robotics, nanotechnologies, brain-computer interfaces. All those things are things that are being worked on right now. Rehabilitation, the medical model of rehabilitation, the doctors say we want to rehabilitate somebody to restore their function caused by the disability through surgery, medication therapy, or retraining. But a more inclusive model includes assistive technology, so that can be a part of the equation of rehabilitation. So the goals of rehabilitation are normally to restore function. Goals of assistive technology
restore function, and increase independence and quality of life. Rehab engineers assist people who have a functional impairment by engaging in these kinds of activities, designing devices, doing research and development, doing technology transfer, marketing, providing these devices, and education and training.
I guess I'm doing the education part right now.
I used to do the R&D part and the device development part. We'll get into that. Came across this definition of rehab technology, which includes rehab engineering, assisted technology devices, and services. So it includes engineering as a part. So it's a three-way combination of engineering, devices, and services. In my professional group called RESNA, there's a bunch of special interest groups, and here's the names of these groups. And from these names, you can get an idea of what these kinds of people are interested in. And it goes from personal transportation, communication, eating, swallowing, assessing, technology transfer, sensory loss, wheeled mobility, stimulation, computer applications, rural rehab for farmers with disability, a huge problem, assistive robotics and mechatronics, job accommodation, gerontology, appropriate technology, and this refers to having the right kind of technology for the right kind of society. You know, you don't want to have a device that needs to be recharged if you're living in a country where electricity is scarce and universal access. This is a very important slide because it summarizes a lot of stuff that I've learned. There are many people with a disability in the U.S. and worldwide. We saw that. But every person with a disability has unique needs and desires. There's not two people. Take two people that are totally blind. Both of them would have different outlooks on life and what they want to do. So their needs would be different because, you know, their expectations of what they want out of life is different. So just because you have a huge number of people who are blind, for example, it doesn't mean that it's one big market. It's not. The largest homogeneous group of the U.S. are wheelchair users, and we said there's about 1 million of them. And this is a key thing here. The lack of a well-designed mass market means that companies serving individuals with disabilities are small companies, and their products are expensive because they can't mass produce them. There's not enough market for them. Okay? That's why things are expensive. So let's get into some devices, and I'll start out with some devices that I worked at the VA, and then we'll get into some other assistive technology devices. This is one of the first things I worked on. You know, probably before any student in here was born, I worked on this. Okay. So this is an individual who can't move her arms or legs, and she needed to control her mobility, her wheelchair. She couldn't use a joystick. So I took apart a couple of Polaroid cameras, used their ultrasonic sensors, and put two of them on the chair to range the distance to the person's head and use that as an input into driving the wheelchair. So the person's head becomes a joystick by them tilting their head forward, backward, left, and right.
Do you believe me?
You will now. I have that exact same sweater. So notice my very subtle movements, you know, cause the wheelchair to steer. This is before I started dyeing my hair gray. And you can go backwards. So there's a little 8-bit computer on there that is doing the ranging and producing analog signals that mimic what the joystick did. And you can probably build this for under $100 now. Okay. Another device I worked on with a team is a device that does finger spelling. So people who are deaf and blind communicate using by touching an individual who is translating for them. Remember Helen Keller? Okay, that's how she talked to. She used Mary Sullivan as her assistive technology in order to communicate to the outside world. So we built a robot that does finger spelling, which each letter of the alphabet has a hand gesture that represents that letter. You know, on a sign language where you have a gesture of both arms that represent words. Well, this is when you get to a word for which there is no sign, you spell it out using an alphabet system.
So let's see how this works. So there's a bunch of servo motors in there, and there's a computer that sends letters to it. And so this is, translates letters into fingerspelling. And the person who is deaf and blind feels that. And
I was on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl with this. Who saw that?
I got the video someplace. And also Discover the World of Science did a really neat video of this, too. Oh, where we took this device with a complementary device that's a hand that translated fingerspelling that you make into letters. And so using both of those devices, they engaged this woman who was deaf and blind and challenged her to use it to buy a dress at Macy's. That was a lot of fun. So that started out as a student project, and the head control wheelchair started out as a student project, but
these represent my refinements.
Worked on this virtual reality project where the person on the treadmill is wearing this head-mounted display, and there's a camera on the side, and the camera sees the legs, and the computer adds in this image of this box, and the subject is given the challenge of stepping over the box
in order to improve their walking ability. And these are for people who are recovering from stroke.
So they can practice stepping over these virtual objects without tripping over them. And sometimes, and they're harnessed in here, but they don't show that. she missed it. She got that one. Takes a lot of concentration. Missed that one. She made it over. So by having this perspective, you really get an idea of what your feet are doing, and you can really practice
and get immediate feedback on how well you've done. And there's also a therapist there as well, and he or she, the therapist, can give clues on how to better succeed in doing this. And if you can step higher and further and step over these obstacles, you're going to be walking better.
Also worked on this neat driving simulator project, which
we'll see when we go over to the VA.
There'll be a demo of that. So this is a three-display driving simulator, and the idea of this is to assess the driving ability of veterans who have had a brain injury,
because we don't know how well they're going to do. And the way that they've been assessing people beforehand is just putting them into a car and seeing how well they drive around the VA, and that doesn't work out very well.
So we have a way of assessing people without, you know, causing property damage, which is important. So we'll see this here. This is really neat. You're able to drag and drop elements of a road and have people run out in the middle of the street and pedestrians and neat things. So that was fun.
There is now.
This is an example of a brain-computer interface. This is a commercial product, and
we'll be hearing more about this on Thursday, because this is one of the projects that students have a chance to work on.
So this brain-computer interface, there's an electrode here and a couple electrodes under the ear cup that pick up your surface EEG and do some fancy filtering. And it can also detect blinks. And this is a Bluetooth device that's connected to a computer. And they market, NeuroSky markets it as a controlling computer games. But you can build on-screen keyboard that you can control with blinks. And this is a computer science student last year who worked on this project as an independent study last spring. Very successful. And so you have an ability to work on this project. PR2, this is the Willow Garage robot that
we'll see, because
we'll be going over there. And they're also really looking at applications of this robot and their other robot for persons with disabilities and seniors. But, you know, this robot is a little massive. It's not human scale anymore. So this robot cost $400,000, but they've given away 11 of them just to get it out into the people using them.
This is an example of some prosthetic devices that are really coming on the market now. A lot of them include microprocessors and sensors and stuff to really figure out how to walk, how to flex, and stuff like that. There's lots of these things on the market. This is an example of one that's for that's a foot, ankle, and maybe lower, below knee, maybe, right? And they also make hands, entire hands that are bionic, and use myoelectric signals to open and close these. I actually worked with at Northwestern on with my colleague was working on this myoelectric signaling project in 1971. Wow. And if you're only missing a few fingers, then you can get individual fingers. And these are things that are on the market. You can buy them. You can cover them up so they look more cosmetic. And not sure how functional they are, but it's sort of neat. And then they have, you have things like the Luke arm designed by Dean Kamen. This, they got $30 million to develop this, and you might have seen this on TV and National Geographic. And one of the speakers actually worked on part of this, and he'll talk a little bit about that. But this is a brain-controlled interface here that controls the entire arm and stuff. This arm will probably sell for over $100,000. But, you know, maybe they can get the VA to provide them to veterans. So it's both a hand and an arm and a lower arm and upper arm and a shoulder. So this is an example of a research project done by University of Delaware. And this one tries to engage little kids in exploring their environment using a mobility device and a joystick here. And they have a bunch of these Polaroid sensors so they won't run into things. But, you know, that's the fun of it. You know, fun is running into things. So, but you know, you'll never see a device like this on the market because, you know, it's very, very limited market. This is a local company, Tibion. They used to be in Moffett Field, but I think they're around here still. And this is an assistive knee, basically. It provides not only assistance in flexing your knee, but also resistance and stuff. So if you have, if you're impaired in your musculature around your knee, then this might work out for you. How many people remember this iBot wheelchair? Well, okay. It's going to be just in your memory because it's no longer being made. This company, this started out with a, Dean Kamen started this, and this was a prelude to the Segway. And this had the neat thing, it was able to balance itself, you know, like a Segway did. And I was one of the first people to use this. They flew me to Washington for one day to check this out for the VA. So it works great. It's there's a lot of great engineering in here. They poured $500 million into this, and at $25,000 per copy, they were losing money on every one. So here's an example of a device that's very well funded and with excellent engineering, but it's a failure on the market. Okay. This is a robot retrainer. These are things that strap along the person's legs and actually walk for the individual, because one way of retraining a person to walk is having therapists, you know, move your legs for you. So here's a robot that does the same thing. And they have one of these over at the VA, so you'll get to see this as well. Now, this thing cost a lot of money, too, but the VA made the decision to buy these. But these are used, you know, just in the hospital, so not you don't have to have one of these at home. This is an interesting device because it's made by Intel. So it's a device that has a camera, and it's made for people with low vision or blindness, and you can point it at a sign, and it can recognize the characters that it sees on the sign and play them and speak them to you as well. But I think this is probably not going to be around very much longer, because I think there's an app for the iPhone that does the same thing. Right. So $1,500 a pound. You know, this is, so you can look here. You know, you can buy a netbook for like $300 or $400. So because this is sort of specialized. I mean, this isn't even a full screen. And they're asking $1,500 for it. And I'm sure they're losing money on these as well. So now we'll get into some student projects that were done. And the idea here is to show you an example of what students have done in the past so that you have a good feeling that you can accomplish the same thing.
This is a standing aid for a young student so that he could assist him in standing while urinating. And the same year, another student team developed this hand-controlled lift that enabled a person in a wheelchair and their therapist to get from the floor to an exercise mat or a bed and stuff. This is one of the very interesting project, very ambitious project that was done about 6 years ago, maybe now 5 or 6 years. So they built a device that enabled by hitting a switch, it was a mechanical system that
turned the pages of a book. This is a persistent problem with books, is getting, if you don't have the ability to turn the page yourself, you can have a machine do it. And there's been a lot of attempts at doing it, and I'm not sure anyone has really solved the problem. I think there's some on the market for like $3,000 that work pretty well. There's some that involve like a vacuum that suck the pages over, and others that use gum to sort of grab a page and fold it over. But it's a mechanical system, and these folks did a good job, but it was just the one prototype. This was the first year in this class, students worked on a project to remove the sock from the lower leg of a below-knee amputee once they put on their prosthesis. There's a sock that needs to be pulled out through the bottom. And so here's a motorized system and a remote control switch that pulled the sock out. So that worked out okay, but the case broke. And so there was another group that worked on it. Yeah, Darnell Singh. Hey, that's me over there. And that was a 113 project. So they did another iteration of design that worked out much better. Oh, here's these folks again. This is a student team that worked on this project that encouraged walking by proper walking by children with cerebral palsy. A lot of them have this particular weird gait where they lead with their toes. They walk on their toes, and so they had sensors in here that would sound off when a particular part of the foot hit the ground. So if you had the right pattern, it would make this distinctive pattern of sounds. And they had a feature on it that if you took 15 steps correctly, it would play music. So very motivational. So these students submitted this project to a design competition, and they were one of the finalists. They all got a trip to Washington, D.C. to show off their project. So this is their fame and notoriety. And there could be one from this group.
This is a very interesting project. This was a paper design of a device that to press elevator buttons for a person who uses a wheelchair. And so what it consists of is this motorized element here that has a laser pointer on it that you'd move the device until the laser pointer pointed to the button on to call the elevator. And then an antenna would extend and actually hit the button. So they never fabricated it, but it was a paper design. And
sort of a neat solution
that I had never seen before. There was a student group that worked on a very challenging project. They wanted to address the need of people in wheelchair to pull open a door. It's very difficult to do, and so they had some ideas that they explored. And they made some headway, but it's still a challenge. I just heard from Shannon today. She's in Oxford, and she wants to come back and work on some more assistive technology projects in the spring. Another group worked using a Wii remote, and actually it was Eric's friend that had MS,
and who needed to exercise their arms. So this was a device that facilitated that. And what they really did is they added in these very intricate sounds. It wasn't just sounds. It was an orchestration. It was like as they moved, they were conducting an orchestra. It was really neat. So these were computer science majors.
We're almost done. Handycart was a project to see how you can attach a shopping cart to a wheelchair for shoppers who are wheelchair users. And so they came up with a very unique solution that was removable. So that was pretty neat. Isaac came up with a app for an iPhone that allowed people who are blind to actually dial numbers without having to see buttons on the screen. And I'll talk about, I can tell you how he did that later, but I'm sort of running out of time. There's this guy who is a quadriplegic, a surfer with quadriplegia in Southern California, who really wanted to control his surfboard. So there was a project to develop a surfboard that's steered by a joystick. So the idea is that his buddies would have him on the surfboard and push him out toward a wave, and then he would use the joystick to catch the wave and come back in. That's pretty interesting. I remember on the day of the project, the students came in and they were all wet because they were testing their surfboard in the bay. So that's dedication. Last year, there was a team that worked on this very interesting project. Exploring ways for a showering aid for people with low knee amputations. So this is the actual device here, and this gray thing is sort of a mock lower limb. So they developed this really neat way of using a ski binding to firmly attach the limb and used a modified crutch with a four-leg system here to provide stability. So that worked out really well. And last year, Harpreet worked on a cane-type device for a retired professor who just needed a little help with his balance. He was able to, he didn't need a cane, and he wasn't quite ready for a walker, so all he needed was some things in front of him to help him a little bit with his balance. So she built a set of canes that he could use to walk a lot easier. And another team worked on a recharging vest for users of these Medtronic deep brain stimulators. And this turned out to be a very simple design and pretty innovative, I thought, as well. Okay, so projects for this next quarter are listed in the handout. And if you haven't got a handout, there's some up here. We'll be talking about that on Thursday. There's other projects besides the ones on the handout. If you can come up with an idea yourself, make your best argument to me, and perhaps we can have you work on it. Other ideas are for accessible interfaces. There's a whole mess of projects that have been done by students from the National Science Foundation. And again, if you have an idea of your own, that would be good. But you have to have a person with a disability around that you can try it out on. So here's the lineup for Thursday. It's going to be a pretty full day, but each of these people are going to be giving very short pitches. So I encourage you to get here on time to make sure you catch all that. It's going to be fun. There's some other people associated with the course that you should know about. Debbie Kenny, who you'll see a week from Thursday, is an OT. Glad to help you with your project. Doug Schwant, who is a colleague, is a mechanical engineer. He can help you with mechanical things. Isaac Penny is around here. Monroe is a local engineer. He's happy to help you out on things as well. Here's contact information for me and the teaching team. Any quick questions at this point? Yes. They'll work out fine. I've done this for a couple years, and we'll pass around a sign-up sheet for cars, for drivers, for
and where people will meet and stuff like that. I'll have maps and everything. I haven't lost anybody yet. Nicole, you have a question?
Can we email you comments in the election?
Absolutely, absolutely. Please email me any comments you might have, suggestions, concerns, whatever.
At this time, I'd like to bring up to the podium Professor Rick Rees, who will talk about...
Before I started, I don't even think I...
We'll talk about the manufacturing mentoring program.
This will just take a minute now, because I know you're going to be anxious to go, too. I work on a program here called the Manufacturing Mentoring Program.
Thank you.
Okay, it's all there. But basically, if you have ideas for a project, if you have a concept, if you have a prototype, maybe even, and want to think about how to take it to the next step, the manufacturing step, if you're actually thinking about a business, you're actually thinking about going further with this, then our manufacturing mentoring lunches, which are once a month at noon, and of course we provide the lunch, we bring together with... Okay. He's always way ahead of me. So this Friday is the first one, and we bring together about 25 mentors of various kinds, some of whom are in this room right here. And we bring in mentees. Many of them are students who have ideas for projects or bring in prototypes or what have you. But some of them are just people who want to come and see what's going on. These mentors have a huge range of backgrounds. They run companies, they build things in China, many of them are designers, some are finance people. We even have a couple of attorneys that come who are intellectual property attorneys. And basically, the students take 5-10 minutes to present their idea, ask questions, then there's a lot of discussion that goes on back and forth, then they break up and they talk to the mentors even further. It's not that formal, and you don't have to be clear about what you want to do. You don't have to be committed to going further with it. We've got plenty of successes. The old saying, success has 1,000 fathers and failure is an orphan, sort of applies. Most of the projects that have been successful are ones that got started in 113, got started in graduate student project courses here, but some just came over the transom. Some of the students are from the medical school, a lot of medical device projects, but interesting hardware projects of one kind or another, ballet shoe inserts, post hole diggers, new kinds of post hole diggers and what have you. So the point is, it's a lot of fun for an hour and a half. There's a tremendous wealth of knowledge in the room. The thing for you to remember then is to get on my mailing list so I can tell you regularly about these lunches. And my name again is Rick Rees. So the email address is Rees.
I don't have that.
Oh,
no, I'm not perfect. I'm sorry.
reis@stanford.edu. Just send me an email tonight saying, I don't remember what you said, but something about mentoring, and I want on the list. Then you'll get on the list, and you'll find out about all the events. So we've got a good crew of about 4 or 5 projects this Friday. So, you know, if you don't have anything, just come anyway. It's a great lunch. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you so much for being here, and I hope you'll. I guarantee that you'll have an excellent experience, class experience.
So, thanks again for attending.
It's wonderful.